You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network.
The views expressed by any host or any guest on the Prairie Punk House Companion are the personal views or opinions of the people who express them and do not reflect the views or opinions of anyone else on the show or any company, employer, or any other organization that the individual expressing them has or will affiliate with in the past, present, or future. Hi, everybody. You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion. My name is Neckbone. This is episode 12. We now have a full dozen episodes. All right, what's your quip for this week?
Hi, I'm Jay the Bear, and next week will be a baker's dozen. Also, I'm really tired, so I might yawn a lot. Sorry.
I was on a trip. I had to go on a trip for work. I did not care for it.
Your favorite rocket ship?
Mm-hmm, I did.
Your kid's not old enough to know what that is.
No, he's not.
That's from Little Einsteins.
Oh, I think actually he did see that on Miss Rachel. I think Miss Rachel covered that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Miss Rachel, who is being attacked by conservatives right now. I don't know if you knew that.
I don't know who Miss Rachel is, so.
Oh, yeah. You should look her up. She's actually pretty cool. She annoyed the crap out of me when my son was watching her nonstop. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, she's for little kids, so. Oh. That just kind of goes with the territory. But she has one of her co-hosts or one of the musicians who works with her is non-binary. And just to be clear, that non-binary person who is on Miss Rachel, it's not even something that they even talk about on the show. They just exist and like play guitar and play like kids songs. It's not a topic that's even broached at all. You know, on the show, I wouldn't care if it were, but if that's what conservatives are getting, you know, clutching their pearls about, it's not even something that's even talked about anyway. It's just something they've made up in their heads. Yeah, this person just plays guitar and sings and exists.
Oh.
And she also, started a charity that sends, God, I'm going to get this wrong. I'll look it up and I'll correct it in the next episode. But she sends food or resources or water or money. She sends something people need to children in war-torn zones like the Democratic Republic of Congo and Gaza and Somalia.
Why is that controversial? Why is that?
Because Gaza's on the list. Gaza made the list, and conservatives don't like that. Yeah, you heard that right. They even want the children there. They actively want the children there to die. They've gone full mask off. So anyway, if you know who Miss Rachel is, you should support her. And if you don't know who Miss Rachel is, you should look her up and you should support her. If you have kids who are less than 5 years old, you probably know who she is. And if they're older than five, you probably don't. But you should support her in whatever way you can, even if it's just sending a nice message saying, thanks for being fucking cool. Just don't watch her videos unless you have kids, because, I mean, they are for kids and they're kind of annoying, but she's cool. Yeah.
I always liked Yo Gabba Gabba. That was a good one.
Never
to watch
watched
with
it.
My kids. Oh, you should.
Yeah.
Not the episode with Jack Black, though, because he fucking sucks now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He ditched his friend of several decades.
Yeah.
For one
joke. For Democrats.
For
Democrats and his payload. You know, you can't put that fucking Kung Fu Panda money at risk.
Right, right.
You gotta,
and it's wild because I'm just sitting here recounting in my head all the times that not just Donald Trump but other Republicans have actively joked about people on the other side of the aisle who were almost murdered by people.
Yeah.
And absolutely nobody got canceled after that. So I guess cancel culture is real, but it's happening because of conservatives and not to them.
Didn't say anything wrong.
No, he didn't. He got canceled though. He lost his agent.
His talent agent.
Dropped him. Yeah.
Yep. That's some bullshit.
Jack Black even dropped him. So
fuck Jack Black.
Yeah. It's too bad. I was always a Jack Black fan.
He's a shit lib.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked School of Rock, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody was talking about how he stole that idea from somebody else.
Oh. But also High Fidelity. I mean, he was the comic relief on High Fidelity, but still great movie.
Yeah.
It is my favorite romantic comedy to this day.
Hmm. I like Punch Drunk Love.
Maybe Scott Pilgrim. Is Scott Pilgrim a romantic comedy?
I don't know.
Or is it science fiction?
I don't know. I don't think it's science fiction.
Okay.
But I don't know. I've only seen it one time. I don't know what category
to put it in. What's that?
I've only seen it the one time.
No. I enjoy that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy most of that director's movies, so.
Who was that?
That was Edgar Wright, who did Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Baby Driver. We should tap him to direct our Christmas horror that I'm writing.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm tapping you into, so.
All right.
Yeah. So, Edgar Wright, if you listen to this and you're interested in doing a Christmas horror movie, you know, reach back out and we can get this made.
Also, Edgar Winter. I don't know if he's still around or not. I just remember always seeing Edgar Winter records at record stores and him looking absolutely ridiculous in all the photos.
Is he doesn't direct movies though, does he? Did he move on to
being a director? No.
Okay.
I don't think he has any connections to movies at all. I was just reminded of him by the name Edward. Edgar, I mean. I'm very tired. Apologies.
An interesting career transition. It could be done. I mean, George Miller, who did the Mad Max movies, he was a doctor before he became a movie director. In fact, he made the first Mad Max movie he made because so many people kept coming in from car accidents, and he wanted to make a movie that was a warning against car accidents.
Oh, nice.
And he made Mad Max.
Mad Max. That's pretty bitchin'.
And then now we get to have Mad Max Fury Road, the best of the Mad Max movies, because of that. So that's great.
Danny Elfman's movie? Him and his brother?
I mean, he makes music for movies. Did he make a movie?
Yeah, they made a movie. It's fucking wild. I don't remember what it's called. I'll look it up real quick. You should definitely watch it.
So I found a shitload of photos today, as I'm sure you noticed from all the ones I sent you. I
did see that.
Including a photo of us at the Annex on the porch.
Like, yeah, I'm going to post some of those.
Yeah, you should. That was during our floppy hair phase. We both had the floppiest of hair in that picture.
Hair. Yeah.
We also looked like we're hungover, which we probably were.
We probably were, yeah.
Yeah. I forget how filthy that couch on the porch was. That thing is disgusting. I slept on that thing multiple times.
I did too. I'm surprised we didn't get bugs.
I know. We never had bed bugs in the house. It's nothing short of a fucking miracle.
Didn't get bed bugs. Didn't get scabies.
Yeah. Didn't even get foot rot.
Nope.
Which is wild. Who was the guy in Lawrence who lost his foot? Because he got foot rot so bad they had to cut his foot off.
Oh, I don't fucking know.
What was his name? He kept it in a jar.
What the fuck?
Yeah, you don't remember that dude?
No.
I don't remember him. So he kept it in a jar, and this is, I don't know how true this story is, and I don't remember who told it to me, but so he got his foot cut off, kept it in a jar, and he was outside one day playing soccer with it, and the cops rolled up because he had a human foot, and he had to explain to him that it was his foot. They thought that he had murdered somebody and cut their foot off and was out there playing soccer with it. So anyway, years later, I was on the East Coast in Norfolk, Virginia, and I ran into him at a party.
Wow.
In Virginia.
The movie is called The Forbidden Zone.
The Forbidden Zone.
You should definitely watch it.
Okay. I'll check it out.
Fucking bananas.
Yeah.
Did you ever see... So we're talking about Danny Elfman still. Or I am, anyway. Mm-hmm. Did you ever see their performance on the Gong Show before they were famous?
No.
Back then they were called the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo.
And oh, yeah.
They were on the Gong Show, and it is incredible. You should also watch that. I went to shows. I went to that show that Cosmic Bean messaged me about. It was really good. They sound very 90s Midwest emo. It was a good time.
Okay.
They were tight.
Mm-hmm.
Sang on key. And it was good. It was very good. Okay. I liked it quite a bit.
And this was at Kirby's?
Yeah, I was at Kirby's.
Nice.
And then, like, it was really hard to go. My social anxiety was screaming at me to stay home, but I went out. I went over to Torrens first because there was a experimental music show there. David from Soligat, I don't know if you remember them or not.
Yeah.
But he puts on this thing. I don't know how often he does it. I think it's called Nimbus. And this was Nimbus 4, and Craig Owens was there. I don't know if you know who that is. He's a old jazz guy here in town.
I don't know him.
He's been around for fucking decades. Mm-hmm. I got there while he was playing. And then, I don't know what to call it. Kind of noisecore, but not like irritating noisecore. He had, like a slide guitar, I think.
Okay.
And was using different implements to make noise from it with a bunch of effects pedals. It was kind of cool. And then there was a guy with an acoustic guitar singing. He sounded a lot like, Mark Kozelek, Red Hell's Painters. And then, so that ended at 9 and I went to Kirby's and I saw a bunch of fucking people from back in the day.
What was there?
Yeah. Sasha was there. She was around back in the day. And then the travel guide played. So this is kind of going to be the last episode before I left.
Yeah.
And the kind of departure of our time together, really. It's kind of weird.
It's weird because after this, I move back to Kansas City and live in some punk houses there. And then after that, I move back to Lawrence again. And of course, yeah, I spent a year in England as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you moved back to Wichita.
So we left off 9/11.
That's right. Yeah.
It's kind of where we
and
ended.
The propaganda show that never was.
That never was, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if this happened before or after 9/11, but it's all around the same time. You had a couple DVDs of Spike and Mike's Twisted Animation Festivals.
Yes.
And
yes,
we
I did.
Used to watch them, and one of our favorites was Monkey versus Robot.
Mm-hmm.
And years later, through the Tallgrass Film Festival, I actually met the dude who made that. And
that's wild.
And, acquaintances with him, and maybe for the Punk Rock Movie podcast, we can talk to him about Monkey versus Robot.
Yeah, I think we should. We got to have him on.
We watched that a lot, and if you're not familiar with Monkey versus Robot, it basically was like the intro music for a would-be cartoon about monkeys and robots fighting. Only there was no show. It was just, you know, like a two and a half minute song about monkeys versus robots with like a cartoon going along to the music of them fighting, basically.
Good song too. Solid song.
Yeah. Quality all the way around. So we decided. Did he
make the song?
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as I know, yes.
Okay.
So we decided we were going to start our own armies, and I chose the robot army because, doy, why wouldn't you start a robot army? And my robot army was called Fred for fucking robots equals death.
Mm-hmm.
And you started your monkey army.
Yep.
And what was it called? Your army of monkeys was called Sam, and it stood for it's so stupid. Something about monkeys.
Nice. Yes, that's even better.
Yeah. And so we had this huge dry erase board in our kitchen, and we just started drawing either monkeys. Well, I drew robots and you drew monkeys, mm-hmm. and they would fight on the whiteboard. Mm-hmm. And this lasted for like a good 2 weeks, I think. We just kept drawing different members of our armies on there fighting one another, and it was a really good mm-hmm. time.
I remember my logic for choosing monkeys is that monkeys actually exist, and there are no real robots. I mean, there are now.
There are now.
But not in 2001.
I mean, some people might say that I'm a visionary for choosing robots.
They might say that, but I still think monkeys, I mean, definitely outnumber robots. So in just sheer numbers, you can pay monkeys and bananas, probably.
You don't have to pay robots.
You have to give them electricity. Program them. They need electricity. Where are they getting that electricity? Monkeys destroy, sabotage, if you will, the power plant. Robots are done.
So the robots have enslaved all the little monkeys to run in little monkey wheels and generate electricity for the robots.
Well, there's a monkey resistance army who is going to destroy that plant and free all the monkeys who will then join that monkey resistance army.
Mm. So we have lasers. Lasers. Monkeys don't have lasers. They have sticks and poo.
You know, according to the movie Beverly Hills Cop, if you stick a banana in a car's tailpipe, you can destroy it. So I imagine the same thing is true with robots.
I don't think robots have tailpipes. Oh, the Fred army does not. No.
Yeah. You wish they didn't have tailpipes. Your technology's not that good.
And that basically sums up the 2 weeks. Mm-hmm.
So the other day, my 3-year-old son informed me that he is now a monkey and I am a robot. And so, even though he put me on the other side, the war continues. And he has not seen Monkey versus Robot yet. He will. He will see.
Do you still have those DVDs?
No, they're long gone. My whole DVD collection is, who knows where it is.
He posted it on, I think, Vimeo a while back, but I think he made it private again. There's... The original video, I think, is made private. Somebody else made like a fan video about it, and it's pretty terrible. It's like black and white, and somebody running around at a beach.
I was gonna say you can't find that on YouTube at all. The Monkey versus Robot.
I haven't looked in a little while, but I think he set it to private.
Okay,
but I'll check.
Let's see if it's. Versus robot. Oh, I've searched for it before, apparently. Okay, well.
I sent it to you years ago.
Oh, okay. So you can listen to the song, but you cannot watch the video.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. Okay.
Well, I highly encourage you to listen to the song, fair listeners.
Yeah.
Because it's a bop.
I'll post it on our Facebook page.
Awesome.
For your listening pleasure.
You want to talk about the raw sewage that was in our basement.
Yeah, that's about the time when we started having raw sewage in our basement, and our slumlord landlord would not do anything about it. She basically told us to stop flushing things down the toilet that weren't supposed to go down the toilet. And I was like, I don't really think that's the issue. I think that there's probably... I mean, Lawrence has a lot of trees. There was a lot of trees in that neighborhood. It was probably clogged up with fucking tree roots.
Yeah.
So we spent two or three months with just raw sewage in the fucking basement. It was miserable.
Yeah, the whole house stank.
It was awful, and started hating being there. Mm-hmm. And then our lease was up, I think, in November.
That sounds right.
And then, because that's when Justin and I moved in, was in November. And then I think we went month to month until the end of December. And we were just like, fuck this. And that's when you went back to Kansas City.
Right.
And I
moved into with that that drummer from KCK, who ended up being in Van or Astrovan / Crooked Grin 2 later.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So. I decided to get a storage locker and put all my shit in a storage locker and just couch surf for a while. I had also just recently decided, not really of my own volition, to start taking classes at KU. And it was a miserable time for me. I was blacked out drunk nearly every night during that time. And that's when I also was introduced to the cocaine and started doing that. And I was working at Urban Outfitters full time, working at La Familia full time, and trying to go to school full time. And it was horrendous. I hated every moment of those 3 months. So the first month I was homeless, I stayed with BK. It was downstairs, so you went down the stairs and there was like this big room with nothing in it. I don't even know if it had heat. It was just like a storage area. So I just kind of stayed there, put all my shit there. And then, you know, I'd go in the apartment and hang out with them because there was always people there. So I was hanging out with them and it was fine. Then after a month of that, I could tell they were kind of getting sick of me. I didn't blame them. So I stayed with Andy IY for a little while, and she had a studio apartment. And I slept on the couch, and it was way too small for both of us. And after a month of that, she was like, it's time to go. And I was like, you're right. So, you know, that couldn't have been. Oh, yeah, it was. So from January to February, I stayed with BK. No, that can't be right. I think I only stayed with BK for a couple weeks, and then I stayed with Andy IY for a couple weeks, because I think most of February I lived on Torin's back porch, which was enclosed.
I remember that back porch.
It was enclosed, but there was no heat. So I just had an air mattress and a sleeping bag, and there was like a really bad ice storm, and I was just like on this back porch with a space heater and an air mattress, and it was fucking awful. It was so fucking bad. And my girlfriend of 6 years and I broke up around that time. That was rough. And just all the alcohol and drugs and trying to not go crazy from being homeless and cold on a back porch was just too much. But I wound up being able to rent a room from Torin, so I moved inside. And it was tough because both of my paychecks came like the week after the first. So I was always like a week late paying rent. And I didn't know at the time, but Torin was super pissed at me. And I was like, you know, here's my part of the rent, and here's the late fees, la 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 la, everything's okay. But he was like pissed because I was always late. And his name was on the lease and mine wasn't, so it made him look bad. And just not a good fucking situation. So then while living at Torrens, I remember one night, it was like my last attempt at school. I needed to write a paper. So I went to the Pirate House and used their computer. And to write this paper, I brought along a bottle of gin, as you do.
Sure.
And I didn't write a single thing, and I just got loaded. And after that, I was like, I'm done going to school.
Fuck this.
That was my school career. I went for half a semester and failed out due to alcohol. Good times.
Did you get any credits? Did you end up with zero credits?
Zero credits.
Yeah.
Zero.
Oh, damn. That's an expensive mistake.
Yeah. And I ignored it until I got married. And then my wife was like, what debt do you have? And I was like, well, the only thing I really have is school loans that I've been deferring for. Let's see, we got married in 2005. So I had been deferring them for 3 years.
Yeah.
She's not paying anything. That's not bad. She's like, we're going to pay these off. I think it was like $1,200. So it wasn't expensive back then.
Oh, God, I forgot college used to actually be affordable.
Yeah. And when wild. I got, I think everything I got was Pell Grants. You know, at the time, $1,200 was a fucking lot.
That was a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, at that time, I don't think either of us even made that much in a month. Or anywhere near that, I think.
No, not even fucking close.
I remember my paychecks used to be like every other week, and they were like $350 or something, like every other week.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was back, especially in Lawrence, man. People paid you the minimum wage, which at the time I think was, I don't even think it had gone up to $7. I think it was still like $5.50 or something.
Yeah, it was like $5.50 at that time. I think they raised it to $6 something by the time I worked at the video store later. The video store paid me like $7 an hour, which, like, when I found out that the video store was going to pay me $7 an hour, I was like, fuck, I have made it.
Yeah.
Like, I am going to be fucking good from now on.
Yeah.
$7 an hour? Jesus Christ. That's more money than I'd ever made in my entire life. Well, and my rent was only $187.50 at the Central House. So, you know, that went pretty far when you're working full time.
Yeah.
And also, I was delivering pizzas part time at the same time. So. I was raking it in. I mean, I felt like I was rich at that point.
Yeah. That was a super weird time in Lawrence. Like, so do you remember Cliff? So he was from Oklahoma and he moved up to Topeka and then he was in Lawrence. And he was like a Flaming Lips super fan. And this is after Soft Bulletin, but before Yoshimi came out. And he was like hanging out with Flaming Lips all the time, and back then they were still like one of my favorite bands. Even as a punk rocker, I am very fond of 90s and early 2000s indie rock as well. Flaming Lips is one of my favorite bands. And he was hanging out with them, and it was like right before Yoshimi came out, and he had early copies of it. And so we used to go to somebody's house, I don't remember, and he would always bring the demos over and listen to it, and that was a lot of fun. And he later went on to play drums for the Flaming Lips and had a pretty bad falling out. You can look it up on the internet to see all the details. It was pretty ugly, and I lost a lot of respect for Wayne Coyne of the Flaming Lips. He seems like a raging asshole and kind of creepy. Not as solid of a dude as he portrays, I think.
Yeah, he kind of creeps on the ladies a little bit, doesn't he? That's, I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff. And you know, when you watch the video for Do You Realize, you kind of get that vibe, kind of a little bit of a cult leader vibe. And I at the time I think I thought that was just like the aesthetic for the video, like it's tongue-in-cheek type of
I don't think it is
like I don't think it is though. Yeah, I'm just like, yeah. No, I think that he like wants a harem like that to just kind of follow him around.
Oh, yeah. I have a hard time listening to much Flaming Lips these days, just because, like, I just think about how gross he is and how much of an asshole he seems.
Mm-hmm. It's too bad, because they have some, especially some of their early stuff, I really did like.
Yeah.
Hits of Death at the time when it came out, you know.
Hits of Death in the Future Head is one of my favorite Flaming Lips records still.
And yeah, that's a great
Clouds
fucking album.
Taste Metallic. We also went, how many Modest Mouse shows do you think we went to? This is one of my most embarrassing stories. Mm-hmm. I think about it often and cringe to myself. But so the Madrid was brand new open and they didn't have their liquor license yet. So we were all on the south side of the Madrid drinking 40s and shit, as you do at shows with no alcohol inside. And I was just like, the drunker I got, the more pissed I got about them not having a liquor license. And went over to our Chronico to get another 40. And a couple people from Wichita that had moved away were there. And they had somebody with them that I didn't know. And, you know, I was stoked to see them. They used to work at the Perk at that
point. Do you remember the Red Room in downtown?
A little bit. I never went there.
I went to whatever coffee shop that turned
the
into.
Bohemian
it turned
Bean?
Into a, what's that?
The Bohemian Bean Company?
That's it. That's the one I went to. Yeah.
But so anyway, I was talking to them, and I don't remember much about the conversation. I started complaining about how they lost their liquor license and I couldn't buy beer at the show. And I was like, I said, come on, it's Modest Mouse. They're a bunch of drunks. But, and in my defense, they have a song. The lyrics are, I'm trying to drink away the part of the day that I cannot sleep away.
Yeah.
Lots of songs about drinking. And, you know, I created a parasocial relationship with them because I was a drunk. They sounded like drunks. When they played at the Replay, Isaac Brock couldn't even play. He was falling down because he was so drunk. You know, so, you know, in my mind, they're just like me, drunk.
Yeah. Right.
Turns out, well, so yeah, I could say that. And then I asked them what they're doing. And the guy they were with that I didn't know, he was like, well, I'm going to go get drunk. I was like, ah, me too. I was already really wasted. Like, that was kind of a strange interaction. Then we went into the show and I pushed my way up front. I'm looking at the bass player. I was like, that guy looks familiar. I was like, oh shit. That's the dude I was talking about. Tell Modest Mouse they were a bunch of drunks. And then he flipped me off and I felt really embarrassed. And it haunts me to this day.
I mean, you weren't wrong though.
No.
Like,
well, maybe Eric Judy's not a drunk. Maybe it's just Isaac.
Maybe.
So, like a year later, Isaac Brock, the singer of Modest Mouse, was dating one of Sarah's friends. You remember Sarah. And so he was around at parties all the time. So I told him about that night. I was like, hey, tell Eric Judy I'm sorry for calling you guys a bunch of drunks. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I told him the story. And he laughed and thought it was funny. And then I tried to talk to him about music, and apparently he just fucking hates it when people try to talk to him about Modest Mouse. And to like a certain extent, I get it. You're in a band, you don't always want to talk about your music, but like, he really did not want to talk to people about being in Modest Mouse. So I tried to avoid that subject. I only hung out with him a couple times.
I think it's him. One of them does the welcome to Seattle announcement at SeaTac Airport.
Oh, really?
I noticed that when I landed the first time in Seattle when I was going there to start my new job.
That's funny.
And I was like, I have fucking Modest Mouse during the welcome to Seattle. It's such a fucking Pacific Northwest thing to do.
So, and that's about the time where Sexplosion started. Was when I was living on Torrin's back porch and mm-hmm. went up to Lawrence and I met Venus
at some show. Oh, I forgot about her.
And started hanging out with her, and she's the one who introduced me to the nose candy.
And allegedly.
So I was working at Urban Outfitters and started hanging out with some people from there. So Eric, Steven, we were hanging out with Leslie a lot. And this is you were already in Kansas City, so I wasn't hanging out with you very much. So Steven and Eric and Leslie were like the people I was kicking it with the most for a while. And then, so Steven was in a band called Getaway Driver, and they were like an emo, like he says, a rock and roll band, which is not incorrect, but just for categorizing purposes, you know, Midwest emo, pretty much. Yeah. They're great. I loved them.
I remember so them. Fun. Yeah.
And then Marty had a band called Salt the Earth.
I definitely remember them. Yeah.
And I worked with one of them, I don't know, at Urban Outfitters. And he may have been in Sexplosion too for a little bit. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think he was. But so they had Salt the Earth. And then this band, so I was hanging out with Getaway Driver all the time. And they played with this band called My Space Coaster. And they were, I didn't know when first started hanging out with them, but they were on a Christian label, and they were just kind of like an emo screamo band kind of thing. But they were a lot of fun, and they wound up hanging out in Lawrence for a long time, or what felt like a long time. And so spent a lot of time with them. And I think the show they played in at the Rainbow House, I was working the merch table. And that's when I met Venus. And boy, was she a bad influence.
Yep.
Also, that hanging out with her was my first experience blacking out, mixing alcohol and Adderall.
Allegedly.
You're right. Yeah, that was a fucking weird ass night. And then, we went to see The Faint play at the Bottleneck. That was the second Faint show in Lawrence. And that was fun. Seeing them in a big place. And it was, you know, people were not uptight about dancing and having fun anymore. So that was a really, really kick-ass show. And that is about the time where I decided I needed to move back to Wichita because I was drinking way too much, doing way too many drugs, and I needed to come home and get sober. I decided that and then had 2 weeks to basically just do whatever I wanted. And boy, did I experience some things in those 2 weeks. It was probably the hardest part of my life, I would say. I wanted to die at that point. I don't know how hard I tried, but I know that part of me was like, maybe I can just overdose and be done. It was really scary and really bad. And my last night in the Lawrence, Kansas City area, I hung out with you at your house and we were up all night. And I think there was a show at the Rainbow House. I had Julie with me. Julie was our driver.
So I lived in, after I moved out, so I moved in with this guy, Justin, who was a drummer who I knew from Kansas City, Kansas Community College, which is my first alma mater, my community college alma mater. And he had an extra room, which I'm not kidding, was just a really long closet that he invited me to move into. And that was after I moved out of the annex because of the sewage.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I needed to move. So I was going to community college in Kansas City. And I was also dating somebody from Kansas City. And I wanted to be closer to her. So I moved in with this guy in Kansas City, Kansas. And I think she and I broke up maybe a few months after that. There's so many times I moved to a new city for a woman I'm dating, and then we break up like 2 months later. I mean, that's just like a normal beat in my life of just stuff that I do. But I moved back to Kansas City to be closer to her. We broke up, and then I moved out of Justin's apartment or Justin's house because I just couldn't stand living in like a long closet anymore. And I rented an apartment in KCK near the Rainbow House, but the only units they had available were two bedrooms. So I got a two-bedroom apartment by myself, one of the only times in my adult life, like, you know, that I didn't, like, have a roommate, like, when I actually lived just straight up by myself.
Uh-huh.
And I kept looking for roommates, and the only reason I got those apartments is, I mean, they were dirt cheap. I mean, it was on a rough street. They had trouble renting them out, and I'm pretty sure, I think I was paying, I think I was paying, like, $250 a month for a two-bedroom. So, I mean, it cost about as much as a one bedroom. And I lived there by myself. I walked to the Rainbow House almost daily. It was almost a daily thing where I just, like, whenever they started, whatever time they started drinking, I would just walk over there and start drinking with them.
Man, so, that's what you did back then.
Yeah, I was living in these apartments in KCK, only a few blocks from the Rainbow House, and just hanging out there all the fucking time. I never did find a roommate for those apartments. So you may have come back and stayed with me at those apartments because I didn't have a roommate. Technically, I had a guest room, but I didn't have a bed or anything in it. So
I don't know. I know, yeah. Heather and I came up one time and stayed with you, and I think it was the same place where I spent my last night in Lawrence. I was up all night and had to get up the next morning and move to Wichita.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure I was in those apartments in KCK because I didn't move in with Jeff Stein until after the Central House. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's across from a park.
Because I remember when Heather and I came up, I drove and I had to, you know, park correctly on the hill.
Yes. It was right across the street from Mission Park in KCK.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Where they have like one of the biggest parks in Kansas City,
right?
Or in Kansas City, Kansas. Yeah, I lived there for a while, and I always felt guilty about leaving Lawrence because we moved out of that house because we had to move out of that house.
Mm-hmm.
But I probably would have just gotten another place in Lawrence with you if I hadn't, you know, tried to move to be closer to some girl that I didn't end up staying with.
Yeah.
Because I was happy.
Yeah, I was trying to think of why we didn't get another place together, and I forgot that you wanted to be closer to her, and you were going to school up there, so you didn't want to commute to KCK every day, and you know, you wanted to be closer to her, and I was like, oh, fuck it, I guess I'll just be homeless. Because in Lawrence, you don't switch houses in fucking January. Everybody moves in June or July. That's when all the students leave. That's when all the leases are up. So that's when you move. So it was
places are open.
Super shitty time to try and find a place in Lawrence in fucking January. And that's why I was like, I'll just be fucking homeless.
Whatever. And I think at one point, I think I did. You had already decided to move back to Wichita because I offered you my second room. I was like, if you move back to Kansas City, you can just have this other room that is just empty. And you were like, no, I'm done. I got to head back to Wichita.
It was scary. I mean, I was legitimately scared about dying at that point.
Because honestly, if you would have moved in with me, we just would have been like drinking and we just would have carried on like we were. I mean, especially down the street from the Rainbow House. We would have been at the Rainbow House. I was at the Rainbow House every fucking night, even by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we would have been there just every fucking night, just drinking and partying.
Yeah.
All the time. And that's what
I tried to quit. I was successful for 3 months And then, you know, fell off the wagon and started doing everything again, only maybe even more once I got back to Wichita. Because I was a bartender, so I was always...
Like, I was you're around everything.
At all the time.
But people, yeah, I felt...
People tipped me with pills and stuff. It was wild.
Especially after me and my girlfriend at that time broke up, and I was just stuck in KCK, just living in an apartment by myself. And I remember thinking, like, you know, I've made a huge mistake. It's like that, you know, that fucking Arrested Development moment where I'm just like, I've made a huge mistake. Like, because I felt like, I felt guilty because I know, I knew that you'd like started spiraling because we were still hanging out. Like, I'd go to Lawrence sometimes and I remember you on that back porch. And, you know, you'd come to Kansas City sometimes because you definitely were at the Rainbow House. I mean, we played together at the Rainbow House. So, yeah, I felt really guilty. Then I was like, I just abandoned my best friend for nothing. I'm not even in this relationship anymore. Now I'm just like in Kansas City. And I, if you would have stayed in Lawrence, I probably, when I moved out of that apartment, I probably would have just moved back to Lawrence. Because I was just kind of, especially like, I mean, the Rainbow House was awesome. I had a great time every time I went there. But there were more houses in Lawrence. But in Kansas City, there was the Rainbow House and there was the Central House too, which was kind of a new house. That's where all the Flanders kids had moved into. They'd all moved back to Kansas City and moved into Central House too in Westport. And yeah, I moved out of, I think, I forget, somebody moved out. There was a room available. And I couldn't get anyone to move into my second room. And I think it was Joe that reached out to me and was like, just move into the Central House. And I was like, that fucking makes sense to me. So I actually broke my lease in KCK, which cost me nothing. I mean, I just gave a 30-day notice and I was like, I'm moving out. And the guy was like, okay. I mean, this was like, most of the people who lived in that building were fucking drug dealers. So... Like, I mean, people were coming and going all the time and all kinds of shady shit was happening. Like, there was plenty of times I got out of my car at night and was like, had to just like keep my eyes forward. Don't look over because you don't want people to think that you're like scoping them out.
Right.
People are doing shady shit. So it was just like eyes forward, get in the fucking building, get in the fucking door. And that's where, that is also where I found. So one day I'd come home to the apartment across the hall from me was open. And it was just fucking trashed. And the landlord was in there, or the building manager, whoever it was in there. And he was like, yeah, the people who lived here got arrested. They're not coming back.
Shit.
And I was like, oh, shit. And they left a cat. And so there was this cat whose name was Harley, named after Harley Davidson motorcycles, I'm guessing.
Harley Quinn. Because
that's who was living there were people who liked Harley Davidson motorcycles and sold drugs and stuff like that.
As you do.
So I was like, I'll take the cat. And I rechristened her Harley Quinn because that's a way cooler name.
She hated me.
Yeah. Yeah. She was mean as shit. That cat was super mean. But yeah, I adopted her and she moved with me to the Central House and she kind of ruled Central. Like, she would stand on our porch, and I'm not kidding, there was a time I looked out, and there was another cat walking down the street, and the cat crossed the street.
To avoid her. Like,
while my cat stood on the porch, like, over her kingdom.
Yeah. Well, she was mean as shit, so it's not really surprising.
There was a time Nick Mayo was trotting down the stairs. He was still living there at that time. But Nick was kind of trotting down the stairs of the Central House and Harley had was laying kind of under, you know, the stairs kind of like they kind of come down at like a gradient. So you can kind of like there's a little space underneath them and a little ledge. And Harley Quinn was hiding under that. And as he trotted over her, she jumped out and tried to trip him down the stairs.
Nice.
There was a time I was sleeping next to. One morning I wake up and I'm laying next to the, you know, the next woman I was dating. And Harley Quinn is laying on her chest with one paw over her nose and the other paw over her mouth. And just, but staring at me like deep eye contact and purring. And I was just like, oh, shit. This cat, she was, I mean, that cat was crazy.
Yeah.
I gave her away to a family. I got to a point where I couldn't take care of her. And then, you know, eventually when I moved to England, I mean, I couldn't take her there with me. So I gave her to a family. I know it sounds like what you tell your kid when the pet dies, but like, no, I actually gave her to a family that like lived in a small town in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And like, I guess it wasn't a farm, but like, yeah, she went to go live in like, you know, some suburban house for the rest of her life. And then when you moved back to Wichita when I was still in KCK in that apartment by myself. And so, yeah, I just kind of like, you know, Joe told me that they had a room open in the central house too. And so I was like, fuck it, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I, ditched out on my apartment, grabbed my cat and whatever I could fit into that tiny little room in the central house and everything else got donated or thrown away. And I moved into the central house and just a whole, for me, my next chapter of debauchery began at Central House too. Rainbow House was still around and it was still maybe not nearly as close as my apartment at KCK. I mean, my apartment at KCK was like 3 or 4 blocks, like walking, no problem. I could get blackout drunk and stumble home and it was not an issue.
Yeah.
At Central House too, I think we usually drove over there, which was not a good idea. Because, you know, Central, I mean, it was the house next door to the old Central House. Right. I mean, you know where it is. And, you know, the Rainbow House was, it was close, but not close enough to walk, really.
Yeah.
Not quickly.
Like 2 miles, maybe? Something like that?
Yeah. And Kansas City is not famous for its public transportation system. So, and this is like, there's no Uber, there's no Lyft. Getting a taxi in Kansas City is a huge pain in the ass, and it's expensive.
Right, you nobody call who works a minimum and wage wait job. For them and...
Right.
Yeah.
So we always drove over there, which was definitely like, I think for all of us, a pretty dark part of our lives because we all did it. Everybody who lived in that fucking house drove while intoxicated regularly, allegedly. Mm-hmm. And we're just all lucky that nothing happened. There was somebody who, and I'm not going to say who, there was somebody who smashed into a tree.
Oh, fuck.
But they were able to get their car out of there and no human was injured, just a tree and a car. Wow. So at the end of the day, they did get lucky. So somebody we knew crashed a car into somebody's house with a passenger in it and he fled the scene. And when the cops showed up, there was just a passenger passed out in the passenger seat and the driver's door was just open and like it was just crashed into a house.
Oh, fuck. So, that is fucking wild.
We that's understandably scary. Have not said this person's name on purpose. But yeah, that's it's a real thing that you did know who come did. It? No, nothing happened.
Was it
their
car?
No, I don't know whose car it was actually. Yeah. For me, Central House 2 was like almost a new level of debauchery. Uh-huh. Even like more, even worse than what we got into.
Uh-huh. Is that when you and Joe became good friends?
Yes. So that's when Joe and I really bonded. So it was me, Joe, Ray, and the other Nick, all living there. And then Nick moved out, and then Maddie moved in.
Oh, I remember.
I don't know if you remember Maddie.
I remember him a little bit, and I think I hung out with you guys a couple times, not very much. I remember you talking about him a lot, and Quinn. I remember you talking about Quinn a lot.
Yeah, Quinn hung out a lot. I became pretty good friends with Quinn during that time too. I think that was when we did our spring break in St. Louis because it was the first we could afford to drive. About that. Yeah. That's still one of my favorite trips. It's just so stupid and ridiculous. And we were just like, fuck it. Let's go to St. Louis.
Nice.
Yeah. And a lot of people hung out there a lot. Katie Donegan hung out there a lot. I think she'd moved back to Kansas City at that point, or maybe she just drove there all the time. I don't really know, actually. Mm-hmm. Fucking Johnny came over. Eric Williams. Eric was over there all the time. It was at the Central House too, where Eric was walking around at night trying to get a suntan without a shirt on.
Nice.
That's where that came from. Yeah. I love Eric. I hope he's doing okay. Eric, if you are listening to this, reach out. I'd actually love to have him on.
Yeah.
That I'm man friends is, with him on Facebook. Great. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I mean, we could reach out for sure.
We could. Maybe we should.
Yeah. I also want, I think it would be fun to have Steven on from Getaway Driver.
Yeah.
He said he would do it for sure. So
sweet.
Mostly talk about punk rock and stuff, but mm-hmm. I think it'd be fun to have other scenes mm-hmm. perspective, because he wasn't so much involved with like the Pirate House and stuff. So
yeah,
and he's a great dude. He's still making music. Yeah. He's up in
that's awesome. Yeah,
Syracuse, New York.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of people from our scene moved to like random places in upstate New York. I know a bunch of them moved to Albany at one point.
Oh, weird.
Which is just an odd choice. And then, of course, you know, a whole bunch moved to the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. Portland, Seattle, and even Astoria, mm-hmm. The town of the Goonies.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's where Russ and Ken are.
Yep. And a couple of people moved to Tacoma because it's, you know, just a cheaper version of Seattle. I don't know. I went to Tacoma to go see NoFX play. Uh-huh. That was the first time I'd ever spent much time in Tacoma. It's empty. It is an empty city. It's like a fucking ghost town, man. Like, it makes Wichita look like the most happening city on the planet.
I think Brandon used to live in Tacoma. And
yeah.
He fucking hated it.
There's nothing, man. When I say nothing's going on there. So there's this little light rail system that goes to the, so the antique car museum is where it's a venue. I mean, it's a museum, but it's like, it's where NoFX played. Mm-hmm. And the little like light rail tram thing they have goes to there, and me and Leahy were staying at a hotel. Leahy flew out there so we could go see NoFX together. And our hotel was right on that tram line.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were like, oh, there's got to be like, you know, right along that line, at least there's got to be stuff. So when the show lets out at like, you know, 10 p.m., because it's a bunch of 40, 50, and 60-year-olds going to the show. So 10 right. p.m. is, I mean, the show would start at like, it starts like 11 a.m. It's like an all-day event. But still, like, by 10 p.m., it was 2 days. Uh-huh. By 10 p.m., it was over. And so we're like, hey, like, you know, let's go, like old times, man. Let's go hit up some fucking bars here in Tacoma. And we took that little light rail thing to, like, you know, the bar district. Which I think is two bars, maybe, and some restaurants. And we kind of found the only bar, and it was literally everybody who was in there was like wearing punk rock t-shirts. So they were all there because NoFX was in town.
That's funny.
So, I'm like, I bet this bar is fucking empty when there's not a band playing.
I heard that whole downtown
was just like, I mean, it's like the beginning of fucking Day of the Dead. Like, where there's just all these buildings and someone's like, hello, and like, yeah, there's just fucking, it's just nothing. Yeah.
I heard, or I saw posted somewhere, that tomorrow is the 30th anniversary of the release of Punk in Drublic.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So we'll go ahead and name this episode in honor of the 30th anniversary then retroactively from this point on. So yeah. So NoFX, if you're listening, make a song about this podcast so more people listen to it.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah, yeah. Either because they love you and want to listen to it, or because they hate you and then they want to hate listen to it. Either way, just more listeners would be super awesome.
That'd be
thanks.
Rad.
Yeah.
Well, I think that wraps up.
Yeah.
The story. I have a lot more stories from when I came back to Wichita. I wouldn't call it punk houses, but
sure.
We were all in bands and craziness did ensue. So
I definitely have more punk house stories because there's so many stories of Central House. I might actually try to have Joe on to talk about Central House too.
Yeah.
Because he was a staple in that community the amount of debauchery that went on there. That was when I got the job at the video store. I worked at a video store called mm-hmm. Videomania, mm-hmm. which was about a half a block from Central House 2. That is by far the shortest commute I have ever had.
Yeah.
And it was great because Central House 2, by the end of the house, did not have a functional bathroom.
Right.
But I had a key to the video store, which was only half a block away. So anytime I had to take a shit, I was off to work, even if it was 2 in the morning. get my slides on, get my key.
Was there like a security system or anything you had to shut off to go in there?
Yeah, there was.
So the owners knew you were going in there at 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever to...
So the owner, I don't know if he just didn't care. He was kind of a dick. And he lived in, so half the year he lived in Johnson County. In the summer, he lived in Johnson County. And in the winter, or our winter, in the Northern Hemisphere winter, he had a house in Cape Town, South Africa.
Holy shit.
Which was their summer.
Yeah.
So he was down there a lot of the time, but he had a camera in there and he would spy on us. But I think he shut it down during our nighttime because he didn't expect anyone to be there. And I don't know if he got security alerts. I know the manager did, but I was also friends with the manager, so I don't think he gave a shit. In fact, the manager came to the central house all the fucking time. Like half the time that he'd be like, hey, I got to head down there with you. You know, like, so he didn't give a shit. But yeah, like so many more stories from central house too. And then after that, I moved in with Jeff Stein. And then after Jeff Stein, I started going to KU. So yeah, I moved in with Stein and I transferred from Kansas City, Kansas Community College to KU, and I got sick of doing that commute because now I was commuting to Lawrence from Kansas City.
Right.
So reverse from what I used to do.
Yeah.
And so I just moved back to Lawrence.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I lived in 3 different houses in Lawrence.
Did I ever come up to Lawrence and visit you?
You did on Connecticut when we lived on Connecticut. I lived with Joe and Carly. And Pete, yeah.
I don't remember.
And
that.
Then I lived on 19th Street with Charisse and Joe and Ryan Folker.
Okay. Did I come up to play a show, or did I just come up for fun, or to go?
Yeah,
to
I think
a
you
show?
Just came up for fun. Maybe both. Yeah. And then I lived at the first house I lived at. That was the Sunflower House.
Yeah, I remember.
You remember me living in the Sunflower House.
And I laughed and laughed and made fun of you for being a filthy hippie. And
it's a hippie fucking house, man.
We're miserable.
Yeah. But they had a room available. Yeah. It was cheap as shit.
Yeah.
And I had just quit both of my jobs. So I was working at Videomania full-time and Little Caesars part-time.
Did they charge rent or was it just like a co-op where you had to do stuff
they charged
to live
rent.
There? Okay.
It was like $150 bucks a month for a room, something like that. But it was all bills paid.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it was those house meetings. I mean, seriously, for a while, I was worried I'd accidentally joined a cult.
Yeah.
Like, because you have your mandatory chores and they come and like check up and make sure you're doing everything the way you're supposed to.
I remember.
Everything's a communal meal. Like, you can't like just go cook for yourself. Like there's a little side kitchen where you can cook for yourself if you want to, but you're expected to go to the communal meals. And I was just like, fuck dude, I think I joined a cult. I gotta get out of here.
Who else lived there? I know didn't Paul live there for a while?
Yeah. Not the same time as me, but yeah, he lived there.
Yeah.
In fact, I think he lived there before me because I think that's how I heard about it.
He lived there when I still lived in Lawrence.
Yes. Yeah. So I think he's the one who told me about it. And I was like, well, I need a fucking place to live. So, well, my fondest memory of living at the Sunflower House was when Joe moved to Lawrence. Joe moved into the 19th Street house with some people. And I moved into the Sunflower House because they had moved there. They basically all abandoned the Central House. And at the end, it was just me and Maddie living there. So they'd gotten this house on 19th Street. And so since I'd moved there a few months after them, like they didn't like there was no room for me. So I just moved into the Sunflower House and Joe came to a party we were having there. And
what was the party like at the Sunflower House?
At the Sunflower House? So the parties were actually pretty cool because lots of different people would come. So yeah, like I for a while met this people from all kinds of different scenes. Like I dated this girl briefly from the hip hop scene in Lawrence. And like, she just came to the Sunflower House because there was a party there and she lived on the block. And so we like dated for a little while. And then there was like some punks that would show up sometimes. And then Joe, I had Joe over. So we were downstairs. I think the party was winding down. So we went down to the TV room and we're watching like Adult Swim or something like that. And Joe was like, those Christmas lights are pissing me off. And that's, he started ripping all of them down. And I was just laughing because I thought it was fucking hilarious.
Right.
And one of the hippies, who was like one of the top hippie guys in the house, came down and ran back up and brought it down some other roommates. And at this point, Joe was already sitting comfortably back on the couch, minding his own business. And he was like, that guy ripped down the Christmas lights. That's uncool, man.
Hey, man.
And I just looked at him.
That's not cool, man.
I just looked at the guy and I was like, no, he didn't. He's like, what? I was like, no, he didn't. He didn't rip him down. I don't know what fucking happened to him, dude, but he didn't. We've been sitting here the whole time. He was like, he didn't? I was like, and Joe was like, no, I didn't. I was like, he fucking didn't, dude. Why are you being a dick? And he apologized and walked back upstairs, even though he looked Joe square in the eyes as he was doing it.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. That motherfucker's probably going to listen to this and be like, I fucking knew it. I knew he did it.
Oh, we need to talk about the night train party. So it was, I don't even know what night it was, but they decided they were going to have a night train party and we were going to drink night train and listen to Guns N' Roses all night. For the most part. Sorry. For the most part, it was uneventful, but at the end of the night, you know, everybody was loaded. And Joe just like picked up one of the chairs on the porch, and not like a little kitchen chair or anything like that. It was like a an upholstered chair, and picked it up off the porch and threw it, and it landed in the street in front of a moving cop car. And so we're like, oh fuck. And I'm just like, sorry about that, he's drunk. And I went and picked it up and the cop just shook his head. He's like, try and keep it out of the street. And that was it. That was fun.
Should we wrap it up there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
about
it.
Yeah. I think we got a couple more episodes in us because you've got Wichita stuff to talk about. I know that we weren't in the same place, and I have way more Lawrence stuff to talk about.
Yeah,
because
no,
I lived in three fucking houses after, and way more Central House too stuff that I'd like to have Joe on. Maybe even, God, I almost would like to have like Joe and Nick Mayo on at the same time and just have them just fucking unpack whatever the fuck was happening in Central House too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So many, many more stories, in store. Real quick. I do want to plug our punk movie reviews, which we're going to have more coming out in August.
Yeah.
They're coming. We're going to have two back to back and then it's going to become a regular podcast that we do.
Is that going to be episode or two episodes back to back?
Two episodes, Suburbia and Suburbia. Okay. So two separate episodes, but they're going to come out. Should we release them the same day or like a week apart? Or
I don't care.
Yeah. Let's release them same day.
Double feature.
Double feature. So we're going to have two episodes, Suburbia and Suburbia. Two separate episodes are going to come out the same day. In August, the actual date TBD. It'll be a Saturday, though. And it will probably be not the same week that this podcast comes out.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, watch out for those. It has its own feed now. It's its own entity. But we'll definitely post it on Facebook and everything. So, definitely listen to that.
Yeah.
If you like movies, and even if you don't like movies, you should still listen.
Yeah, for sure. I have some guest ideas. I've talked to a handful of people also since we kind of are nearing, we're not at the end, but we're nearing the end of some of our wacky tales and adventures and misadventures. So, you know, probably going to start having more guests on to let other people tell their stories. So I have a handful of people I've already talked to come on and tell some of their stories.
It'd be cool to hear about the OKC
scene.
Omaha, Minneapolis, Twin Cities scene. Mm-hmm. There's a huge one. I mean, that's one of the big places people from our scene move to. If they didn't move to a coast or Chicago, they moved to Twin Cities.
Yeah. Well, that's where crust punks go to die.
Yeah.
It's the crust punk retirement home. Mm-hmm. And then also Austin Lucas. Mm-hmm. He's from Bloomington, Indiana.
And he was in
23rd Chapter and Rune. And now, of course, he's a solo artist playing country and Western music. And I talked to him and he said he would be down to come on. All that stuff are things to look forward to. And, you know, obviously we want to get Joe on or get Nick on.
Yeah.
I'd love to get Andy IY on. You know, BJ maybe.
Leslie
would be great if anybody's familiar with the LFK brand. Leslie, she started that shit. Brandon would be cool. I don't know if he will or not. I bet we could get Bulkelman to come on. That'd be fun.
That'd be awesome.
And
he could talk about the Manhattan, Kansas scene.
Yeah, and
which we haven't even touched on.
I bet we could get Jeremy on. And he could talk about the Topeka scene because that's originally where he's from.
Anyway. But we talk a lot about like Wichita, Lawrence, Kansas City because that's where we lived.
Mm-hmm.
But there's funk scenes in a lot of places in Kansas, like Topeka, Manhattan, Kansas. Mm-hmm. I would wager that. I mean, I've met a few people who lived in Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Oh.
Which is wild to me that there were any punks in Pittsburgh, fucking Kansas. But, you know.
Winfield. Alex from O'Phil is from Winfield. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where they started. I reached out to him and I think he'd be down to come on too. Because we could talk about he did a lot for the ska scene here in the 90s. So that'd be cool. I mean, the Crown Bingo Arena was...
I remember that
the place to go for shows almost on a weekly basis, it seemed like, for a little while. We got a lot left we can do. Figure out what we're gonna do, and
even if a couple things change slightly, even if we're not talking about, you know, houses we are getting shit faced in constantly, we're gonna keep going and try to talk about other scenes and just other experiences in, you know, being a punk in flyover country, really.
I'm sure there's a million more gaps we can fill.
There's so many gaps to fill. I even have some friends who live out in Norfolk who are part of the scene out there.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's the East Coast, but Norfolk, Virginia is not considered, like, I mean, it's not D.C. It's not... It's not even Richmond. I mean, that's people don't think about Norfolk for anything other than maybe going to the beach in Virginia Beach, but that's about it. Yeah, there's way more shit we can talk about. So please keep listening. Please listen to Punk Movie Review as it comes out starting August 2024 with more episodes. Thank you so much for listening. And tell your friends. Tell your family, unless they're ultra conservative, then don't. But yeah, actually, maybe even especially them to listen to us. Yeah. And we'll see you next time.
Go like and follow the social media stuffs.
Oh yeah.
And
do all the social media stuff. You know, what did they say? Like, smash that bell, all that.
Something.
Do all that stuff.
There's Patreon and Ko-fi too.
Oh, that's right. Only if you
can afford it and want to.
Right. If you can't afford it, it would be awesome to at least break even on this. But if you can't afford it, then just follow us, tell your friends, listen, get more people to listen. That's how you can support. That'd be dope.
All right. Peace out.
Bye, everybody.